WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening, South Shore. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk. Heard only right here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will be your guide, your talk guide for the next hour and 45 minutes, right up to 8 o'clock this evening. And we have one heck of a radio program on deck for you. We will start things off with the State House report. We actually have a new participant to the State House report. And that is none other than the State Representative Steve Exaros. He represents the 5th Barnstable District, and he will be joining us. And we have a few things that we're going to be talking with the representative about. First off, kind of get an idea as to how the first half of his legislative term, his first term in office, has been going, some of the things that he's been doing. We also will talk with him about a couple of other things, such as Nero's Law, knowing that he was a deputy chief in Yarmouth, where Sean Gannon was shot and killed. We'll talk with him about that. We'll talk a little bit about mandates for masks, and even talk with him about Afghanistan and the United States and how the manner in which our country pulled out of that country following a lengthy war. Then we'll cruise into a conversation with Mayor of Weymouth, Bob Hedlund. We'll check in with Bob Hedlund and see what's going on in his great town, the town of Weymouth. Our number two, we'll speak with mayoral candidate and at-large counselor, Tina Cardoso. We'll get her take on how her term has been going as an at-large counselor, and also get details as to why she decided that it was best for her to instead of seek re-election this coming fall in the city of Brockton, but to run for mayor. We'll talk with her about that. Then we're going to close things out with a book author. The author that's going to be joining us is none other than U.S. Army Chaplain Colonel David Giamona. And he's going to talk to us about the new book he just wrote, The Military Guide to Armageddon: Battle-Tested Strategies to Prepare Your Life and Soul for the End Times. And you betcha, a good part of the conversation will be focusing on the country's strategy when it came to pulling out of Afghanistan, because he actually did service in country in Afghanistan in, I believe, 2005, 2006. He and Troy Anderson wrote this book. We're going to get details about the book and his take on not only this war that we just ended, but any possible next wars or hotspots that we should be concerning ourselves with as the end times near. Time for us right now to find out what's happening out on the roadways, being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshop.com. with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, Weymouth, and now in Hudson, New Hampshire.
Mallory, this has been like the best, worst summer ever.
Why do you say that, Jeffrey?
The weather.
Oh, the weather. Mm-hmm. The boat sure looks great in the backyard.
the retro 1987 Quadrajet 350 Mark Cruiser.
That's not currently working.
What about playing your cousin's golf tournament?
It did not stop raining.
All
the entire day. Well, Jeff, at least it was close to the new Brennan Smoke Shop in Hudson, New Hampshire.
Ah, that's what makes it the best worst summer ever. Hudson, New Hampshire, Brennan Smoke Shop.
Your pal Joe Healy just installed the signs.
My pal from high school, Mass Sign and Decal. Well, this is New England, and honestly, I thought commuting to New Hampshire every day in the rain was going to be a big deal, but it's really not that far.
It's really not that bad of a ride.
It's really not that long of a ride to tax-free Hudson, New Hampshire.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in the world. Customers must be 21 years of age or older, and as always, proper ID is required.
Have a better summer.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, we are here at the first segment of Monday Night Talk, and it's the staple of the program called the State House Report. And it's an opportunity to speak with a lot of legislators who work in and around the South Shore. We're very fortunate to have a first-timer joining us. He is a state rep representing the 5th Barnstable District. If you don't know what Barnstable is, it's if you don't know what the district is, it's Barnstable, Bourne, Plymouth, well, it's a little bit of Plymouth, and Sandwich. We have State Representative Steve Exaros joining us. I hope I said that right.
You nailed it. Yes. Hello. It's great to be here. I'm doing great. It's been quite a experience and week in my life, but I'm doing great.
Let's start out with talking about this is your first term, successfully elected last November, sworn in January. What has the first half of your legislative session been like to date?
Very exciting. I love it. You know, I was a police officer for 40 years, and this is just another way to serve. So politically, it's interesting. I have a lot to learn. I've never run for office. I'm very grateful that the people of the 5th Barnstable District, I call it the fighting 5th, because we'll always fight for our district. It's about 40,000 people, and they gave me their respect. And I won't let them down. So politically, there's a lot to that, and I know what to do. But really, I focus on the service. It's really, really comes down to taking care of the people in our district and our Commonwealth, and working together to make it a great place to live, work, visit, and raise a family.
You know, one of the interesting pieces here, you know, the first thing I want to ask you about is what was it like working on your first budget? But I also, in that time, you also have a chance to file legislation, participate in certain bills. I think I want to go there first because there was a very important bill, Nero's Law. And knowing that you gave your service as a police officer for 40 years to the town of Yarmouth, I want to get your take on participating and testifying on behalf of Nero's Law.
It's really incredible. It's democracy and progress. So it's not easy. There are 7,000 bills that have been filed in this session. We have 2 years to, you know, get them done. But this is personal to me, the Nero bill. You know, I was the deputy chief of police in Yarmouth, and I sent Sean Gannon and K-9 Nero and 7 police officers, a team, a warrant team, on a mission to arrest a very bad, evil criminal with a long, violent record. And they left my office around 12:30. And around 3:30, I heard them screaming for help on the radio. And it was one of the worst days of my life, April 12th, 2018. When I arrived, Sean Gannon had been shot. He had been taken to the hospital. His dog, Nero, our dog, was trapped in the house with the murderer. And we had to get the murderer out. We had to try to get Sean to live. And we had to try to find Nero and rescue him. So a lot of things happened that day. Sadly, Sean died despite everybody's efforts. The SWAT team and all the officers arrested the criminal very professionally. That was very difficult to do, knowing he had murdered a police officer and shot a police dog. And we rescued Nero. He had been trapped in the house with the killer for 3 hours, and we were able to find him alive. He had been swallowing his blood for 3 hours to keep his airway open, shot in the head. And I was there when every paramedic and EMT wanted to help Nero but couldn't because the law doesn't allow it. Imagine the law in Massachusetts does not allow a EMT or paramedic to help an animal or put it in an ambulance. So we put it in a police car and we kept Nero's airway open. We stopped the bleeding and we saved his life. And I left my job because of that incident. 40 years is a long time, very proud. And my mission is to pass that bill. It's called the Nero Bill. And we want to make it legal for our EMTs and paramedics to save the life of a police animal injured in the line of duty.
And it seems as though it's making progress so to this point?
It is. We have 90 co-sponsors. There are 200 elected officials. Think of it, 7 million people in this great state. And I'm one of 200 elected officials that are fortunate enough to do this. So we have about 100 co-sponsors. We had a hearing, thanks to Chairman Gonzalez and Chairman Timulty. They're the Public Safety Committee Chairman. I'm on the committee myself, which is really ironic. And we had a great hearing, and we're hoping for a favorable report, and we're hoping to push it forward and get it done as soon as we can sometime this fall.
Yeah, and I would love to have you back on if there is success or if you're nearing success, just to provide an update to the listeners.
Yes, sir.
Talk about putting together, you know, being a part of the budget process and being able to fight on behalf of your constituents to be able to get local aid and get the financials that they need.
Yes, that's what it's all about, really. Again, and very exciting, very special to me because I believe in our country. I love this country. I love America. And this is how it works. We may not, you know, like it all the time, but this is how it works. You know, you elect people that you believe in and you go through the legal process. So we worked on a $49 billion budget for the state. $49 billion. And you spend a lot of time listening to different groups, labor unions, nonprofits, all these groups that, you know, need money to keep going and projects that they're working on. In my district, the big, big, big project is the new bridges. You know, we're going to build two brand new Cape Cod bridges. That's a $1 billion project that will be paid for by the federal government. Hopefully that's the plan, but there's a lot to that. So to participate in that, to represent, you know, the 5th Barnstable District, the Fighting 5th, and work with everybody else. You know, I'm lucky. We have great, great representatives and senators in Plymouth, also in Bourne. You know, I have two different counties, and it's awesome. I try to get along with everybody, and that's the process. And you try to get as much as you can for your own district. And we did, and we were successful. And you also, I try to look at the big picture, you know, what's important for all of us. And look at the human side and realize there's a lot of suffering out there. There's homelessness, there's addiction, there's mental health issues. And those are all personal to me. I've seen it in real life as a police officer, and I want to do everything I can to fix it.
Probably one of the final questions that I'll ask you in regards to being, you know, your term so far. What's your thought? You know, we're seeing the Delta variant. You know, this, we're seeing a new strain, and who knows if there's going to be other strains that follow it. What role do you feel the state government should take when it comes to any further mandates down the road? Should it be kind of localized, or should the state step in and go, okay? Because it seems that a lot of communities, there's a lot of infighting about whether the boards of health should have some kind of edict about masks. Should the school committees be where should the state stand in all of this if we're going to be if we're going to be protecting our citizens?
That fantastic question. You know, I am not a doctor. I'm not a medical person. So I trust the experts, but even the experts have different opinions. And I've been vaccinated. I'm proud to get vaccinated and fortunate. But, and I encourage everyone to, if they choose to. So I would lean more towards giving good guidance, listening to experts, and allowing people to choose and make their best decision.
Excellent. We are speaking with a state representative serving the 5th Barnstable District. Steve Xaris is our guest. I want to touch on a personal side, if you don't mind. I know that your family, rich with history when it comes to the service of our country, whether it's the Air Force, the Merchant Marines, the Army, you being a Gold Star father, losing your son Nick in 2009, the news that we have been experiencing over the past couple of days in regards to almost going a week now of our country's actions as how we have left Afghanistan. Watching all of this, would you give me your thoughts and your feelings on watching all this unfold? As somebody, as I said, has such rich tradition when it comes to service of country.
It's very hurtful. Hard for me to watch, you know, as a father. I try not to watch it. As an elected official, I do to learn. But my thoughts are the suits in Washington have let us down. There's been a it seems like bad leadership. But my focus is on the boots on the ground. And I know your daughter served over there. And thousands have. So in the last 20 years, when we were attacked by these evil people that killed thousands of Americans, it was people like my son and your daughter. They all volunteered. Nobody was drafted. This is the next greatest generation. My focus is, you know, the boots on the ground, and to be proud that you and I and thousands of other parents raised brave young men and women. Yep. They went off to a very tough country. They kept us safe for 20 years. We lost thousands, like my son. Others were badly wounded, blinded, lost limbs. Others suffer the invisible wounds of war. War is horrible. But I focus on being a proud father. Your daughter looks in the mirror and is proud of themselves. You know, whatever happens now is beyond them. Be proud. You've done a fantastic job. I'm proud, and America is proud of you, and we love you.
And full disclosure, as the representative stated, my daughter, Taylor, just 3 short years ago, actually served 9 months in country. She is a member of the U.S. Army, and her and I have had many talks, and she told me about, you know, depending on certain parts of the country you go to, if they know that you're with a large contingency of U.S. soldiers, it was more deadlier than if you were in a, you know, you were a smaller detachment. And it was an interesting, you know, I feel fortunate that she was able to do her service, her duty there. I think she was scheduled at some point to go back, but it never happened. But she was one of the fortunate members of the military who did her service, unlike your son, Nick, who was not. Do you feel a sense at all that his participation in his service was for good, or do you feel that it was a wasted opportunity for the many soldiers, as you stated so eloquently, who lost their life, who lost limbs, severely injured, both physically and, let's not forget, mentally, because there is a mental component to this when you serve and when you give service to war in times of war.
His service was not in vain. His service was badly needed, and he had the courage to go and do it. He served in Iraq as a Marine on the ground. He was infantry fighting the enemy, face to face, and he was almost killed in Iraq. Two Marines died saving 100 Marines from a suicide bomber. And he made it home. And I was there when he came off that bus from Iraq. And I'll never forget that feeling, ever, seeing your son come home. And then he volunteered to go to Afghanistan. He wasn't supposed to, but he begged and begged and begged to go. He had a strong passion to defend our country. But I knew it was going to be bad. I just had a bad feeling. I saw it in his eyes. And, you know, it's hard to hug your son and let him go. And, you know, that was May 15th, 2009. He hugged me and crushed me. And I had to let him go. And I've never seen him again. I've never seen his body. I've never seen him again. So I have to live with that. And so does his mom, Lisa, and his siblings. He has three younger siblings, Alex, Elizabeth, and Ashlyn, and they never had their big brother come home. So that's hard for us. And it's devastating for many families. But we do the best we can to honor Nicholas, and we'll never look back on his service. We're very proud that we raised a Marine.
Probably one of my final questions on the topic. Do you feel that as a country, this was a teachable moment? I mean, again, you look at some of the past wars we've been in, Vietnam, you know, the earlier Iraqi war that we were engaged in, to, you know, the later one in Afghanistan. Do you feel that we have learned, or at least from now on, moving forward, that our government, that our military leaders will find a better way to be able to downsize and leave a point of engagement?
Great point. Yes, I think we've learned a lot. You know, large battalions on the ground fighting an enemy that doesn't wear a uniform, that is mixed in with the civilians, that will never fight engagements. We won every single battle in Afghanistan and Iraq. We always will. We're Americans and coalition. So they fight differently, and we will too. And we will use technology. And I think it's important that we send a strong message to anyone that attacks this country, that we will find you and we will end you. And leave it up to the generals, the experts, not the suits, not the politicians. Unless they have service, it's really special if you served and you're an elected official, because you know what it's like.
Do you do regular events in your son's name? I think there's a ride. Is there anything you want to promote quickly, just to kind of in memory of Nick?
Yeah, we've started a foundation, Nicholas Giaxaros Memorial Foundation. It's a nonprofit. No one is paid. It's just volunteers. Every penny gives someone a chance, a veteran. We have Big Nick's Ride for the fall and a motorcycle ride every July, 1,000 motorcycles. We do the Falmouth Road Race with 10,000 people every August. And we do everything we can to remember Nick, but it's all about helping those that made it home. And we'll put veterans on Sandy Neck Beach so they can have a place to heal. We'll take homeless animals and put them in the arms of a loving veteran to have love and feelings again. And it's all designed to make sure they know they're respected. And I wear a 22 kill ring on my trigger finger because 22 veterans that made it home take their life every day. And we need to stop that. And it's people like us, like you and I, and every good American out there that does what we can to make sure they know that they're not alone, and we love and respect them.
Representative, for your constituents, if there is a constituent in need or they have an issue, well, what's the best way for them to reach out to you and your staff?
Absolutely. Biggest thing we do, you know, politics is obviously important, lawmaking, budgeting, but biggest thing, taking care of our people. Give us a call at the State House, or we have a cell phone also, you know, we'll make sure you have that. But the best way really is email, Stephen, STEVEN.XIAROS at mahouse.gov. We answer everybody that's a constituent, and we will always do what we can to help them, whether it's unemployment, housing, addiction. It can be, a crosswalk in front of their house. There's all kinds of things. And I'm very proud that we answer everyone and we do everything we can to help them. That's our job and that's my mission.
Representative, this has been a great discussion. I look forward to adding you to the roster of state reps and state senators that we have on a regular basis on this program. And if you can, you and your staff, if there's something that is pertinent that you want to get on and do a segment, please, I hope you'll feel free to reach out and have a reoccurring dialogue.
We will. I love it. Thank you very much, sir. God bless you and your family and your daughter. And let's do it again as soon as we can.
There he is. State Rep Stephen Exaros, our guest here on the Monday Night Talk. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we're going to have Weymouth Mayor Bob Hedlund joining us. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
You like my new car?
Well, I like that new car smell.
What is that infernal binging?
Oh, it's part of the driver assist. Standard equipment nowadays.
Assist?
Yeah, watch.
Hey, cut that out. You're way too close.
Yeah, it's telling me that. See the text?
Watch out.
What was that?
We're driving too close. That truck snapped back a rock.
And now I have a cracked windshield?
You know, your mother was a way better driver assist.
Please, kindly check your windshield.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny & Sons Glass. We replace your windshield and insurance pays. 1-888-64-TINIES. Just call. And thank you.
Do you check your Google search results regularly? You should. People often get their first impression of you or your business online. Negative comments on the internet can impact your life and your livelihood. Take control of your online reputation. Get your free reputation report card at reputationdefender.com. It may reveal negative posts from an ex-employee, upset patient or client, news article, legal issue, or even exposed personal information right there in your Google search results. Uncover what's lurking on the internet about you with reputationdefender.com's patented scan and get your free reputation report card. Or for immediate assistance with your reputation, call 800-401-6681. Our cutting-edge technology helps make your Google search results look their best. Call 800-401-6681. That's 800-401-6681. 800-401-6681. Or take the free scan at reputationdefender.com.
Travel back in time at the South Shore Music Circus with shows like America on August 28th.
See, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain.
And classic rock legends Grand Funk Railroad on September 9th.
I'm your captain, yeah.
Don't miss your chance to see these great bands live. Get your tickets now, only at themusiccircus.org.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, welcome back. Joining us, welcome home, are in order as Mayor Bob Hedlund, Weymouth Mayor Bob Hedlund, original host of Monday Night Talk, joins me as he does from time to time. Mayor, how are you doing, sir?
Excellent. And it's good to be with you. Your name came up in conversation earlier today.
How so?
I was talking with a gentleman that I don't think you've met him, but you know him. And he's the guy that actually gave me my first ever opportunity to host a radio show. A gentleman by the name of Bob Katzen.
Oh, I know that name.
Yeah, he's been on the airwaves. He's the owner, actually, and content provider of Beacon Hill Roll Call, but he's done a lot of radio work through the years. He knows radio. And actually, he's been doing some work up until about a year ago on your sister station, WMEX.
Okay. And so how did my name maliciously be dropped?
He was asking me how things were at WATD.
Ah.
Led to that.
Oh, okay. Do you miss it? Do you miss doing the grind of doing a weekly radio show and then also doing all the stuff that you normally do as an elected official?
I love radio. I don't know what it is. When it hooked me as a kid, a little magical in a sense. And, between the music side and the talk show side, I definitely miss it. I definitely would love to do something again someday. So maybe I'll muscle in and back in and, have a coup, stage a coup on Monday nights.
You mean like a Dwayne Glasscock type of a thing?
Yeah.
How are things at the helm of the town of Weymouth as the mayor? What are some of the latest developments going on in your community?
It's pretty steady as she goes. I mean, we're a year and a half into my second term. The first term was a whirlwind in terms of the projects that we undertook. We've created new playing fields, fixed every existing playing field. We're building a new middle school funded by the first, override in town history. The town really got behind that project. It's a massive building. Because of our population, this thing's going to be the second largest middle school in the state in terms of square footage. So it's a pretty big undertaking, big facility. We completed our new library, which is a real state-of-the-art library, a real kind of envy of those folks that are in the library world. Just undertaking huge infrastructure work. What I'm most proud of, I think, lately, Kevin, and it's not the sexiest thing, but traditionally this town undertook about 1.2 to 1.4 million a year in road repairs and repaving and sidewalk repairs, and now we're averaging about 8 million a year. So we're really getting caught up on roads. You travel through Weymouth, you see a lot of work getting done. We fixed about 500 gas leaks. Working with the gas company, we have all new mains going in under our new roads. Hopefully you won't see those trenches that drive me crazy when I drive down the road, and a sunken trench that was dug to repair a gas main or a water main. Lot happening. We're trying to get the new master developer underway at Union Point. That obviously has got a lot of potential down there. All kinds of work going on at our beach with a beach connection project that was on the drawing board for 30 years. We're getting that done. So lots and lots and lots of stuff. Oh, and next week we're going to be awarding a contract to remove the unsightly incinerator. It's on the banks of the Back River. An area of critical environmental concern, and that's a big mistake the town made back in the 60s.
Not to head down any kind of misconceived rabbit hole, you mentioned the former Union Point, the Naval Air Base. What are your hopes and concerns, knowing that we've seen turnover with developers? I mean, are you cautiously optimistic that the group that's coming in now is going to actually get this to the finish line?
Yeah, they're kind of like the last best hope. They're a competent group with a good track record. The biggest challenge they have is water and sewer infrastructure, which really unlocks the potential. They're really hamstrung on getting anything done until that's done. They're in their due diligence phase now of going over land acquisition and working out the deals with the current landowners, that kind of thing, permitting, et cetera. But the big hurdle for them, and for us, because we're partners in this in a sense, is providing a water source for that site. And the stars are really in alignment right now to get that done. There's federal money available to us, the state money available to us, with all of this stimulus and ARPA money that's kicking around. And we're making a move to really make that happen right now and get a new water source into Union Point, but will also supplement the existing resource we have here in Weymouth. So that's probably the biggest undertaking we have right now and biggest initiative we have in the town.
And where's that source of water? Is this something as to, if you have federal funds, you're going to tap into the MWRA, or is it another source?
Well, let's put it this way. It's not official yet, but we need water. A lot of communities on the South Shore need water. We're actually in a better situation than most of the surrounding communities around us that are not on MWRA. Quincy is, everyone south of us and us, and we are not. But the situation's pretty bleak in places like Scituate and Hingham and Norwell, as you know. So the MWRA, they've got 100 million gallons per day excess. So, yeah, it's a logical situation that you mentioned. Nothing's official yet, but you seem to be able to connect the dots.
I do, and I was going to mention other sources, but I thought I would go with the common sense one. I know that the city of Brockton, they've had ongoing discussions in the 90s where they talked about hooking up to the MWRA, and then they end up, going with, a desalination plant.
Right.
And that's
no, you've kind of, being the good reporter that you are, you've kind of elicited and extracted kind of a scoop out of me here, because this isn't something we've really disseminated within the community just yet. We're in the initial phases, but, we have done some work on this. And like I said, the stars are in alignment, funding, engineering, the benefits of MWRA water in terms of supply, quality, et cetera, all make sense. There is one piece of this puzzle that we are working on right now, and that is to try to understand what it means to the ratepayer. We understand the capital costs. We got a handle on that. But the rates is, we're trying to pin down what the reality is and what discrepancy there would be in rates.
Yeah, and if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Weymouth Mayor Bob Hedlund. Here's our guest for this particular segment. Bob, we'll segue away from that. I know that you're a guy who is, you've got a global sense about you. And when you were behind the microphone, you love talking about world and national news. I saw you post we're at a point in time in our history here as a country where, some of the things that we do, the world is watching, because we're seen as a global leader. And you're somebody who has openly spoke about this socially. And that is the pullout of Afghanistan. What's your take on that? As somebody who has always watched what we've done, not only here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, but as a nation.
Yeah, when I was a kid and I read George Washington's farewell address, where he warned of, the wars and intrigue of Europe, and warned us of entangling foreign alliances. I've always held that near and dear. That's been kind of the guide on how I judge candidates nationally that I vote for. I think we've had a horrible foreign policy during my lifetime of all of this intervention. It seems like we didn't learn anything from Vietnam. I was against, vocally, obviously, the war in Iraq, and I was pretty much against the war in Afghanistan. It's interesting that we demonize the Taliban. But it was all about 9/11, right? And yeah, maybe there were elements of Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, but, if I want Al-Qaeda hiding out in some place, I don't want them in Yemen. I don't want them, in the Straits of Hormuz. I don't want them in Saudi Arabia. I want them in a cave in Afghanistan, And we didn't learn lessons from the British, from the Russians. We went in there and we made it over time about nation building. And we've got that mindset, the neocons and their enablers, and, every congressional official that voted, for the authorization to go in, and there's very few that, spoke out against it. People like Ron Paul or Barbara Lee, Democrat, who were consistent on this. And then to stay there 20 years is just a sin, because we were never going to accomplish anything in a nation that isn't really a nation. It's just a conglomeration of tribes, religious sects. It's just something that you never, this was inevitable. And as you know, when I did my gig on ATD and I did my two different gigs on WRKO, I was pretty vocal about that. And that goes back over a decade. I mean, I was preaching to get us out then. This is just, I applaud Trump for starting the negotiations and I applaud Biden for getting us out. But clearly, they botched this exit pretty bad.
It's interesting knowing that, you know, going into this war, you know, we were well aware as a nation that, you know, another superpower had failed, you know, and we're talking about the Russians, you know, the Soviet Union being in Afghanistan and spending all that money only to just basically get out of there with a tail between their legs.
The British tried and failed three times, right? Three times, you know, and the Russians spent a decade there.
So why wouldn't we take a look at history and go, here are, you know, predominant, you know, world powers that failed.
So you have three, I think there's three parts to that answer. Number one, Americans don't pay attention to history and don't learn from history generally. Then you have, you know, people with agendas, whether it be war profiteers, some people who truly believe, you know, and have this, you know, where we want to project our ideals because we're superior, this American arrogance that we're going to try, you know, to, you know, whatever the cause is, liberals who want to see women's rights in Afghanistan, or the conservatives that like to flex military might, or, you know, the globalists that want to engage in nation building. I think it's a combination of all of that stuff.
So I'll transition away from that, from talking about Afghanistan, and thank you very much for your input. Again, it's, you know, you've shared that out there on social media, and I thought I would take an opportunity to kind of chat with you about it because some of the stuff that you posted was good common sense stuff. And
Evan, you know what? Just one last point on this. I don't spout off on my social media pages as mayor about international and national stuff that often anymore.
Right.
It isn't worth it because we're so divided that half the people will say, hey, Bob, that's great, and half will attack me. The posts that I've put up on Afghanistan, it's funny, my liberal friends and my conservative friends are on there all pretty much agreeing, except where they, you know, they start the finger pointing, it's Trump's fault or it's Biden's fault. But other than that, they all agree, you know, we needed to get the hell out of there.
Right. But there could have been a better way for us to have left the country, but yet still left somewhat of a presence, and at least been able to have pulled out all the information.
We're being lied to right now. I mean, I know our intelligence is off, but you know, this is a face-saving thing by a lot in our military to make up these excuses now. And this is just a debacle of the first order. And this clown Milley should resign. At the very least, he ought to resign, if not more.
As we have a couple more minutes here Weymouth Mayor Bob Hedlund, let's end on an up note, and that is that it's been a summer of freedom for many of folks here on the South Shore and in and around the Commonwealth because we've been dealing with a pandemic. I see that you've been able to spread your wings a little bit musically, Mayor.
Yes.
Do you want to expand upon that?
No pandemic is going to stop me if there's a show.
Yeah. So who have you been out and about and seeing? Because we know that you are the rock and roll mayor.
Down your way, Memorial Hall. We saw Southside Johnny. Got a couple shows queued up. Had a great experience down in New Jersey. Went to this festival called Rock Ribs and Ridges. I didn't know what the ridges were, but they pointed out to me that it was the mountains in the vicinity.
Okay.
And it was a Southern rock festival. And I went one day. I wouldn't have been able to handle all three. But on the day I went, it was a great lineup of some old Southern rock war horses. Molly Hatchet, Blackfoot, Artemis Pyle Band, and the Outlaws. And I know you're an Outlaws fan.
I am, very much so. So who else have you seen? Anybody else of interest as of late?
Yeah, I just have to think about it, but yeah.
But I thought recently you saw Joan Jett.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that already. That was most recent.
Did you catch yourself at any point in time during any of these shows and be like, wow, have I really missed, you know, being out amongst people and enjoying music?
Yeah, but I mean, like, I still had the opportunity to see a lot. I mean, I a couple of friends had some tribute bands that they set up, and they you know, had some private functions like that. So there was a continuation. And in fact, the last band I saw before the shutdown was my all-time favorite, Kevin.
Scorpions?
No, my all-time favorite.
Saxon?
No, close. You're getting closer.
UFO?
Yes. Sorry. It was February, right before March hit, when everything came tumbling down. But yeah, the Joan Jett show was interesting. It was at a private party.
Well, anything you want to say to wrap up this segment? I know you're a busy man, and we appreciate you coming on and chatting with us. Anything you want to say to wrap this up?
No, just good to reconnect with you again, and hope everyone at the greatest independent radio station in the United States of America is doing well.
Mayor, thank you for joining us.
All right, Kev.
We are going to step aside, and when we come back, more Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9
WATD. WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. If you owe the IRS back taxes, then get ready to pay up. The IRS has giant private collection agencies actively tracking down folks who owe the IRS. So if you think dodging them was stressful in the past, it's going to get a whole lot tougher. Optima Tax Relief has this advice. Don't wait. Solve your tax problems now before it's too late. Optima Tax Relief works to stop the demand letters, stop the aggressive collection actions, and stop the IRS collectors from targeting you. Ask Optima about the Fresh Start Initiative, one of the biggest breaks the IRS has ever offered. If you qualify, you could save thousands, and nobody knows this program better than they do. Optima is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, and they get results, having resolved over $1 billion of tax debt for their clients. Get a fresh start. Call today for your free consultation.
Call 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
This is Paul McCarthy with a reminder of a great opportunity for all adult learners. The Labor Guild School, the oldest continuing adult labor education center, is now registering students for its virtual fall term. Labor law and steward training are among the many popular courses offered this term. Interested students should contact the Labor Guild at 781-340-7887 or the Guild's website, laborguild.com.
I'm Gina Brazow with Dress for Success. Our mission is to empower women to achieve economic independence. Please join us on August 28th for our virtual Power Walk. We are located all over the globe. For more information, please visit our website at dfspowerwalk.rallybound.org. Thank you.
This is Chris Atwood from 95.9 WATD. Join me this Friday from 6:15 to 10 p.m. for The Alternative, when we flash back to 70s punk, 80s new wave, 90s Britpop, and new music from today. The Alternative, this Friday from 6:15 to 10 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Okay, we're back for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Hopefully it's not too windy where you are at this particular time. City of Brockton, I know we're all dealing with COVID. And we're trying to get our, you know, wrap our heads around another a Delta, another variant, another strain. But there's a city election that is right around the corner. As a matter of fact, I want to say that it's less than a month away until the September 14th preliminary. That's where they kind of whittle down all the candidates on the ballot and get them all ready for November 2nd, Tuesday, November 2nd, the general election. Joining us right now, we are privileged to be talking with at-large city councilor Tina Cardoso, and she is not only going to kind of give us a little bit of insight as to what her term has been like this past term, but also she is a candidate for mayor. Tina, welcome to Monday Night Talk. Thank you for being a guest.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin. This is great.
For the folks who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself other than being a proud elected official.
So Tina Cardoso, I've been in Brockton about 20 years. I grew up in Dorchester. I'm an immigrant from Cape Verde. I came here when I was four to the U.S. I studied in the Boston Public Schools and went to UMass Boston, where I earned my degree in nursing. And I've been a nurse for 25 years now. I have three kids that were raised in Brockton and all graduated from Brockton High School and went on to higher education. My daughter has a PhD, proud to say that, in psychology, product of the Brockton schools. My second child is a school teacher in Boston and a union rep now in Boston for BTU. And my youngest child graduated UMass Amherst last year with a degree in psychology. So I'm really, really grateful for Brockton and the school system that helped my kids. As a single mom, I needed all the support I can get. And they did really well. So I wanted to give back. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing now.
Give us a little bit of a recap of your first term as an at-large counselor. It's not like you're a ward counselor, not to diminish anybody who's a ward counselor, but it's, you know, you're somebody who everybody from the city, if they have a complaint, if there's a pothole on their street, if they get a neighbor who might not be putting their trash barrels, you get the calls no matter where it is in the city. What was this last term like for you?
Yes. And on top of all of that, Kevin, I am a nurse who's worked in community health for a long time. So I'm really connected to the community. And I'm a nonprofit leader and we do violence prevention, especially domestic violence. I'm a survivor of domestic violence. So it's an area that really interested me when I started the organization. So I wear many hats in the community. And so when COVID hit, as you can imagine, I was super busy. First of all, I have my own full-time job. You know, the council is a full-time job with part-time pay. So we all have to keep our real jobs where we make our money to pay our bills. So when COVID hit, I had to go into Boston, to Boston Medical. That's where I work as a frontline worker to help there. And on top of that, I had to help my community as an at-large counselor. And the nonprofit work that I do for mental health and domestic violence, you know, all of that escalated with COVID. So it was a really, really challenging time trying to learn procedures on the council, trying to learn government and manage all that I had to manage around COVID. It was not easy, super challenging. I'm still going through it, but I learned a lot. I jumped right in with the experience that I have as a nurse, helping folks to access resources. And I started the Health Equity Task Force was something that we initiated, myself and other members in the community, to make sure that we were prioritizing the funding that was coming in to go to the areas of need in the community. So as you can imagine, it was a really challenging time.
Going on that word challenging, what challenges do you feel that the city faced, maybe succeeded, maybe came up short during COVID?
Well, I got to say that language was a huge issue, having information in different languages. That's something that I've been working on for years, language equity, we call it, to make sure as the demographics changed in Brockton that we were providing information in the different languages that we have in the city. And that really hurt us during the pandemic, where we didn't have a way to disseminate information in different languages to folks so that they could take this this pandemic serious, and it hurt us, and it contributed to the high number of cases that we had. So part of the work that we did on the task force was to sort of give recommendations to the mayor, who we felt just didn't know the community well, as to how to manage COVID with the issues that we had in the city and what areas needed to be prioritized. So I don't think we did a great job getting information out in a timely manner. By the time we got information out to folks in different languages, it was 6 months later, and we already had, you know, many deaths in the community.
Okay. So let's talk about you're about to finish out your term as at-large counselor. You know, it's the summertime, comes time to, do I run for re-election? Do I run for another office? Where were you when you finalized the decision in your head, whether it was a conversation with, you know, some of your folks that you're a trusted circle of friends and consultants? Where were you when you made that decision?
So it wasn't an easy decision, as you can imagine, because I have a lot that works against me. But it took me months to come to the decision. I went away for a little bit. I took a trip to Cape Verde, to my home country, and stayed there for 3 weeks. And then I came back, cleared my mind a bit. And then I was just sitting on the couch one day with my boyfriend. And I said, you know what? I have nothing to lose. My kids are all grown. I said, I took a leadership during COVID, and I did all this stuff to help this community. So I feel I'm a strong leader. I think I can do this. You know, my kids are all gone. My nursing career is great. I can always go back to that. I said, I'm going to take a leave from my nursing job. I'm going to do this and see, you know, where it lands, you know? And like I said, it wasn't easy. I thought about everything that's happening right now to me. I thought about all of that. But I think at the end of the day, having a change in leadership and to see this city really progress was more important to me. And so I'm ready for the challenge. I'm already, like, you know, deep in it right now. And I'm standing strong because I firmly believe that it's time. It's time for new leadership. I've identified some areas that border on just unethical things that I've seen on the council that really is holding this community back. A lot of the pay-to-play politics, a lot of who you know, the nepotism, you know, the money passing from this hand to that hand. And we're really leaving people out. And I think COVID-19 taught us that we can't continue to govern this way. We need a more inclusive process. We need, you know, people who really care about the city and not just their pensions or putting their siblings in office or their best friend. It's time. The city has just been governed by the same people with the same ideas for many years. So I really think that people want something fresh and new.
You're just tuning in. We are speaking with Brockton City Councilor and mayoral candidate Tina Cardoso, and we're talking a little bit about the decision to run for mayor. Now, there are four candidates. You're one of four candidates. You have an incumbent. And I think if I asked all four of you this question, I think that there'll be a couple of similarities, but I think there'll be some differences, too. And that's the importance about the democratic process. What do you feel are some of the key issues in the city of Brockton that need to be addressed?
So there's a couple articles that just came out that list Brockton. One was number one and the other one was number two, worst city in the Commonwealth. And worse for poor infrastructure, worse for crime, and worse for no jobs, for lack of jobs. So it's just embarrassing. Because we have a lot of great people in this community. We have a lot of intelligent people that really could help us move forward. We have doctors, we have lawyers, we have architects, we have all of these people, teachers and nurses. They all work in Boston. They don't work here. They sleep here and they work in Boston. Some of them don't even pay attention to the Brockton politics because they've given up because they've realized it's the same old, same old. Each time a candidate comes up, they promise you all this stuff and nothing happens. So we're not tapping into all that Brockton is, the diversity, the education. We have highly educated people here in Brockton, smart people, good homeowners. We have some great businesses that just need a little help. And we're not tapping into that. Our abandoned properties, you look around, you see so many abandoned properties, you see so many dilapidated buildings, you see trash, you see roads that are just not paved. And it just is horrible that we're not doing more to make sure that Brockton is on a map as a better city, in a good place to live and work. We're not business friendly. You know, we're not friendly to the small businesses that we have here. During COVID, a lot of them didn't qualify for PPP. They didn't qualify for SBA loans. And that's because a lot of the minority owned businesses are not structured properly to be able to qualify for those, for that funding. So I advocated with the COVID funds that we hire a small business tech person. And we actually have done that. We have that person, and I'm hoping that she's going to be able to tap into the minority-owned businesses, the woman-owned businesses, at least create a database so we know who they are, and then start to help them structure their business properly so they can qualify for funding. They can get tax credits for keeping up their businesses and their properties. We can help them with marketing. They can create jobs for people right in this city. We have a lot of small businesses that are hurting. We can't possibly bring new businesses in until we fix our infrastructure, we help these small businesses, and we reduce crime. So public safety absolutely has to be addressed, but it's going to take an effort where we are involving people from the community that know what they want. We don't engage people enough in this community. Civic engagement doesn't exist. We make decisions like the $98 million public safety complex with no hearing, public hearing. So folks are not engaged. They're not paying attention. Voter apathy is huge. We have dismal turnout rates, you know, for a city of 60,000 registered voters to get 12,000, you know, each election is really sad. But a lot of that is because we have created a system of who you know, who's paying into whose other's campaign. We haven't created a system where people are, we're bringing in folks and we're engaging and involving folks and showing them that we value them, you know, that their voices are being heard. I get a lot of slack on the council as a troublemaker because I call out a lot of this stuff. But a lot of people also find it refreshing. Even though I'm breaking Robert's rules, I'm still pointing out a lot of these things that have kept us back. You know, we're supposed to have a strong council, weak mayor situation here, but it's not the case. The council can't possibly, in their defense, investigate all of these agenda items and go in there and do a good job and ask tough questions because they just don't have time. You get a $15,000 stipend, you know, and you're supposed to, you get the agenda a week before you vote on this stuff. You don't have staff. You don't have an office. We're not doing justice to our residents. So I felt it was a waste of time for me sitting on the council. All I'm doing is making enemies because I'm the only one calling out this stuff. So I felt, you know what, just go for the big seat because the mayor has contracting power. The mayor has the power to hire and fire and hold department heads accountable. The mayor has the ability to change and move the city forward, but I just don't see him being that mayor. First of all, during COVID, he showed really poor leadership. We had to reach out. I myself reached out to state delegates to make sure the city was getting the funding that they need while he sat back trying to decide which way he was going to go. And I just don't think he's going to do the job to move us forward. I understand people may want to sympathize because of COVID, but he did sit on the council for 16 years. And in all that time, what was his track record in getting anything done? So we have to take that into account as well. And I'm hoping to be the agent of change for the city. I think it's time. I mean, I ask people all the time, Are you better off now than you were 10 years ago, 20 years ago? And if you're not, then why not give someone new a chance?
Right. So, well, I have to say, your answer, there's so much to unpack there. So much to unpack because you're not the first to have brought a lot of these issues to light. I've lost count of the number of candidates that I've interviewed over the years, and a lot of the things that you have mentioned, they have mentioned their frustration with the system. But you know, is a part of the problem. Part of the problem, the limitation of how long someone is in office. So if, let's say, you're elected, right, you get a 2-year term. And by the time you get into office, you get settled, you get a staff, you're already running for re-election. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that part of the problem? Or is it just a matter of having somebody who wants to get this done? How do you, I mean, do you have a plan to kind of jump into some of these things?
Yeah, I definitely think we need longer terms. I definitely think so.
Yep.
But I think that it depends. I mean, I feel like, how can I put this? We already know the type of leadership we're going to get under this mayor because he's just part of the good old boys. It's the same family. It's the same families that have been here for a long time. So what's to say in a couple of years, he gets his pension, then he's out of here. What did we get out of it? You know what I mean? That's what they do. They line each other up. The next one takes the position. They get their pensions. We've seen this over and over and over again. I have friends who say to me, Tina, I've been going to Brockton for 20, 30 years. Nothing's changed. So what do we have to lose by putting someone fresh in there who's not connected, no special interest groups? I've just put $10,000 of my own money into this campaign. I have very little money. I'm spending my own money. I took 3 months off my nursing job that I get paid very well to do this. I just want to help young people get engaged. I want to empower the more educated, affluent communities to come out and to say, invest in Brockton and say, hey, Brockton has a lot of potential. We could do this and we can do that, but we're not seeing that. We're seeing developers that are coming in, they're developing here and there, they're donating to the mayor's campaign or to some of the council folks, and then that's it. We're not seeing this movement of, you know, we have these proud Brocktonians that we can empower to really help Brockton move forward. And I don't think giving this mayor 2 more years, I don't think we're going to see that. I think take this opportunity now where you have someone fresh and new that is not politically connected to anyone, that's going to really listen to people. The mayor has lost 10 staff members. How do you lose 10 staff members in less than a year? In important positions, we have no human resources us right now, no assistant human resource, no auditor, his chief of staff quit, the director of social services quit, a few other positions under him have left. That is not leadership that we need in this city. We need someone that will welcome folks into City Hall with open arms, listen to your ideas. I have so many people who call me up and they say, Tina, we have all these abandoned properties. I have this project idea. Can the city support? And we don't do it. So we leave these buildings. We're not even collecting the fine because, you know, code enforcement in Brockton doesn't even exist. So we're not collecting the fines on these properties. Yet we have people with good business ideas and we're not allowing them opportunity to make their dreams come true. So I think I would be that person to listen to people. I don't promise people anything, but I promise them that I will listen and that we will change things, because if we continue to allow these same people, these same families to run the city, we're running it into the ground. We're on a downward slope right now, and COVID has hit us hard. So that recovery is going to take someone that can work with anyone, you know, and I don't see this mayor doing that.
And if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the Brockton City Councilor, at-large Councilor Tina Cardoso. She's also a candidate for mayor this, at least for September 14th. And
yes,
if she is successful and whoever else is successful, top two vote getters, then we talk more for November. But right now, all the marbles are in the middle for September, the preliminary. You had mentioned during your earlier answer that it was rubber, the public safety complex was something that did not go through the process where the residents could chime in, and that there's a full-on discussion. Do we want to spend this money? Is this the right placement? What would you have done differently? And is there, if you're elected, is it too late for change?
No, I don't think it's too late. I would love to have more input as what folks feel. If we can borrow $98 million, let's hear what folks think are priorities for that borrowing. And also, how do they feel about centralizing this complex, right? How about satellite police stations, north, south, east, west, so we can have better relationships, police and community relationships, you know what I mean? How do folks feel about that? Where they have a station, like in Boston, we have the stations Area B, Area C, or what have you. Let's hear more about what people think we should be doing with this money. Also, I would prioritize a Health and Human Service Department. We're a major city. Our census shows that we're like 120,000 right now. So we're a major city. So why not a Health and Human Service Department where we have layers of, you know, mental health, veteran services, elder services, youth services, domestic violence, all of that. And we're really looking at health disparities. Asthma is huge in this city, and I think it contributed to COVID, but we're not looking at gas leaks and all these other contributing pollution and all that. We've only ever tackled tuberculosis, which doesn't even exist much anymore. So when COVID hit, we were not prepared to take on COVID because we don't have an actual Health and Human Service Department. That's public safety too. You know what I mean? So why aren't we prioritizing that? There's just different things that I would have prioritized if I thought, not that the police don't need better headquarters, because the place is crummy. We all know that. And so we need to do something about that. But I think we can do both. And I think we need to do both. We need more police presence. I heard a lot of complaints during the fireworks where people couldn't sleep. There was a lot of noise, and there was no one out in the street, police officers out in the street helping. We had 5 fires during that time. You know, so these are things that I hear, and we need to prioritize public safety. But I think we can find ways to accomplish both things, where we increase mental health services, we increase services for youth, you know, and elder folks and veterans, and we have a more comprehensive health department that is tackling all of these issues and staying on top of health disparities so that when something, a pandemic hits, we're prepared for it. We don't have a good database. We didn't know our infrastructure as far as technology is horrible. We didn't have any way to capture data on COVID when COVID hit. So we didn't know where the hotspots were. We don't know who was getting COVID or who wasn't getting COVID or what areas we needed to prioritize. So we have to prepare ourselves for that. And I think my 25 years experience in healthcare would definitely be a benefit, and my great connection to the community. I've worked with all of the different unions. I've advocated for workers to make sure that they were being safe, because those workers are leaving the factories and they're coming out in the community and they're spreading the illness. So we really needed to stay on top of the factories and the supermarkets to make sure they were following the CDC guidelines. These are things that I would prioritize because I think it's all part of public safety. And that's just, you know, I feel like we're going to borrow a huge amount of money next week, $360 million for our pension liability. It's like the biggest appropriation in Brockton history that I've seen. And yet the public doesn't even know about it. We just don't do a great job with transparency in all of this borrowing and making sure the public is aware of what's going on with their tax dollars, because they're the ones at the end of the day that are going to be burdened with this. You know,
the question I was going to ask you as we wrap up here, is there anything that we haven't touched upon? But I think, my goodness, I think you've really, each time I've asked you a question, you really have touched upon a lot of different topics. But I'm going to throw it out there. We got 2 minutes left. Is there anything we haven't touched upon or you haven't had a chance to mention real quick?
Well, just as far as the taxes, I think we need a better tax assessment process. I think there are folks that are getting tax breaks in this community because of their connections. And then there are other folks that are, their taxes are going up every year. I voted against the tax increase. I would not increase residential taxes. Our commercial tax rate is the highest in South Shore. So that's going to be bad. We have to look at that because we want businesses to come in here. Right. And then as far as our water bill, we throw so much money away on Aquaria, $8 to $9 million on the desal plant. We don't even use it. We could have gotten out of it for non-performance a while ago when we did a test and it didn't perform for 4 days in a row. But we still continue to hang on to Aquaria and I don't know why. It's a complete waste. We're not using it. But yet we've increased water bills for folks every year for the last 4 years by 10%. So and now we're borrowing money to fix our water mains and, you know, and fix our to the tune of $19 million for just one ward. It's going to take us billions to get the whole city done. But yet we're throwing money away on Aquaria. So those are some things we really, I'd definitely get out of Aquaria for non-performance if I could and find other ways for a secondary water source. So those are some things I think we need to, we need to start saving people money in this community. It's, you can't live here. The properties are expensive. Rent is expensive. We're going to push people further into poverty and push them into homelessness. We already have a huge homeless situation. So those are things that you're not hearing this administration talk about. They have no plan to do any of this. You just hear the fluff stuff. You hear them, you know, we're starting this task force and we have that task force and we're giving out citations and we're raising flags. And all that. This is all fine and dandy, but what are you going to do to move this city forward and help people who are suffering in this community?
And if folks want to find out probably everything that you talked about and more, I'm sure you get a website in development or that it's already up.
It's already up, Tina for Brockton. And you can also email me at info@TinaForBrockton. info@TinaForBrockton. And TinaForBrockton.com is the website.
And one more thing I'm going to ask is Tina four, is it the number four or is
the
it
number F-O-R? Four? It's the number four for the email, but for the website is F-O-R.
Well, I look forward to having more conversations with you down the road. Mm-hmm. And we wish you and all the candidates the best of luck because it's not easy to run for higher
office. It's not easy. It's not easy.
And we thank you. And I hope that we can have another conversation or many more conversations down the road.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me. This was really great. I appreciate it. Thank you for all you do to help folks get the information they need to make a good decision. And I just urge folks to go out and vote September 14th. Even if it's not for me, if I win, I'll still represent all of Brockton, those who vote for me and those who don't. The important thing is just to get out there and vote.
Yes, let's reduce voter apathy. Well, yes. we're going to step aside. And when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Right here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Being in the Army National Guard is about more than serving your country. It's about being there for your community when your neighbors need you most. The Army National Guard makes college affordable, and serving part-time can help you graduate debt-free. Do you want to stay close to friends and family? The Guard allows you to serve close to home. Serving part-time in the Army National Guard lets you have the life you want. Learn more by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Massachusetts Army National Guard. Aired by the Massachusetts Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm Tyson Sennerberg, co-founder of Type 1. Our mission is to raise awareness and funds to the cure for Type 1 diabetes by supporting the Fausman Lab at MGH. Join us for our first annual Par for the Cure Type 1 Golf Tournament on Wednesday, September 15th at Crosswinds Golf Club in Plymouth. Scramble Shotgun start at 1 p.m., followed by a cocktail reception at 6, with live entertainment provided by Ward Hayden. There will be activities on the course, as well as a silent auction and raffles. For further details, text CURE-T1D to 44321.
The 13th Annual Marshfield Community Rib Cook-Off will be held on Saturday, September 11th from 12 to 5 p.m. at the Marshfield Fairgrounds. Despite Dwight and Jim Sylvia will provide the entertainment. There will be a touch-a-truck area and other kids' activities. Wristbands can be purchased in advance for $5 at mcrco.org. Proceeds will benefit the Marshfield Food Pantry, Marshfield Facts, McKinney Vinto Foster Care, and the NCC Missions. Again, mcrco.org for full details. Thank you, and I'll see you there.
Jay Farner here, CEO of Rocket Mortgage and Rocket Companies. Last year, we saw historically low mortgage interest rates. What you may not know is that interest rates are already starting to increase, and it's likely that trend is only going to continue. Our team of experts is standing by to help you save before rates go up. Don't look back and wish that you had taken action. Call 833-8-ROCKET or visit rocketmortgage.com.
Rocket.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLS ConsumerAccess.org number 3030.
Liberty Mutual Insurance Company presents
Doug.
And we're back with Limu, Emu, and Doug for the final question. Category is things you climb.
All right, Limu, what do you think? You sure? We're going with Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need.
Oh, so close. We were looking for stairs.
Huh. Only pay for what you need.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Joining us for this segment, we have a gentleman who is the author of a new book called The Military Guide to Armageddon, Battle-Tested Strategy to Prepare Your Life and Soul for the End Times. And joining us is a U.S. Army chaplain, Colonel David Giamona. I think I said that right. Right?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure to be with you today. I really look forward to our conversation. I think it's going to be very insightful in many ways.
I think it kind of goes hand in hand. We get to talk about your book, you know, what went into writing the book and some of the theories and the strategies to putting a book together, but also that it also, you know, you serve time in Afghanistan. You're a military guy, and I'm sure that you have your thoughts on what our country's exit strategy was when it came to leaving Afghanistan. But let's start with, tell us a little bit about yourself as an author here.
Yeah, thank you. 32 years in the military, so I've been around the world a few times. Was in three combat tours in Desert Storm and then in Iraq and Afghanistan, where I earned the Bronze Star for supporting combat operations in several countries. And also was in Kuwait and Latin America. And I lived in Europe for about 5 years and also was the chaplain and religious support of all the Pacific region. So I have a world view of what's going on and all the implications, really what's going on in Afghanistan and how it's going to affect us in the short term and in the long term. And the reason we wrote The Military Guide to Armageddon is I took all my military experience, all my training, all my years of service, and I translated it into everyday language that people can understand so they can be prepared for all the things that are happening on the planet right now. So we're excited about the book. We're excited about all the things God has done, is doing, and is going to do here in the future.
What made you want to write a book? I mean, is this something that has been on the back burner for you for oh so many years, and maybe you write down notes and finally it just culminated and you said, you know what, I want to put pen to paper, put an outline together, team up with someone like a Troy Anderson and put this book together.
Right. Well, those are, and all, you know, there are parallel processes in our life. You know, God is the author of what we're doing. So he's the one, but you have to realize in the 32 years in the military, I could not write a book because military people are, you know, aren't authorized to do that kind of thing and have your own opinion about things until you get out and you retire. And the second reason I wrote this book is not only did God tell me to write it, but also when I went to war, I saw what war did to people, what did the soldiers and their spiritual selves and their worldview. And so a soldier really struggled, many have struggled with how can I believe in a God that allows my friend to die or me get wounded severely and blow things up and my allow me to get PTSD and all these other really bad things? Well, I took all of that experience and I said, Lord, I want to prepare the church, believers, for what we're going to experience and what we are experiencing. So I started writing the book in 2018. Right after I got out, or during, you know, the last time year I was in the Army, and the Lord had told me, spoke in my heart, and said the world's going to change when the book was released, and it was released of January 5th of this year. So a lot of things have happened.
It's worth asking you, and why is it that our country's retrograde operations struggle to meet success? And I mean, when I say retrograde, why is it that we are masters of being able to strategize to go to war and to ultimately win the battles within, but yet when it comes time to wind down and get our people and equipment out, it's something that we haven't mastered yet?
Well, that's a long discussion. First, let me say this. The military is expert of going in and going out. I believe, and I know this to be a fact, we had retrograde operations all planned out. But the president of the United States, let's be honest, made some terrible decisions, did not listen to their military intelligence, didn't listen to their senior people. And those senior people are not going to throw the president under the bus. So they took the hit the other day in that Pentagon briefing. But I know for a fact that it was Joe Biden and Joe Biden alone that made a decision to do this when everybody told him not to do it. But that's the price we pay for hiring a weak leader and voting them in. So I don't blame the military 100%, because the commander in chief is the one that made the final decision. We could have done a much better program, much better operation, retrograde operation, if we had listened to our military.
Is a part of the secret, though, that the Taliban knew we were going to be pulling out eventually. And we kind of gave them, like, yeah, we're going to be pulling out soon. Would it not have been better to kind of keep that something closely veiled and then announce to the world? Yeah, we've wound down. We got like 1,000 forces that are still there in our embassy, but we're successfully out. Wouldn't that have been the better way to go?
Well, you know, there's some truth in what you're saying. There's a lot of ways we could have done it. You know, the Taliban are not stupid. They knew when we were going to pull out, even if we didn't say anything, because we worked closely with the Afghan army. And there's a lot of leaks over there. So that wouldn't have been a big issue. The issue is you have to strategize on the ground what's going on in real time. You just can't start pulling out. If we had followed the phased operation of retrograde operation that our military had laid out to the president and said, OK, we're going to get our civilians out. We're going to get our equipment out. We're going to start phasing out operations in retrograde so it's a smooth operation. And we'd leave a contingency of military there even for a long period of time to come to help the Afghan army. Well, once we left lock, stock, and barrel, the Afghan army was completely helpless. They didn't know what to do because they needed our support. They needed our leadership. They needed our weaponry, especially in the air. And they didn't know how to operate without us. So the whole country collapsed in a matter of days. And everybody could see it coming. And it was poor decision making.
In your opinion, if I could ask you, how should vets feel about their time in service over there? Should they be proud or should they feel otherwise?
Well, I'm getting that question a lot. And the answer is twofold. Number one, I served over there with a lot of great vets. And I know that we did our job best to our ability and what the United States asked us to do. So every vet who's listening to us, you did your job. You did what's asked you to do. And you provided security for a world. And now, of course, terrorism is going to be a lot loose in the world. And we have our open borders. But you did what you had to do at the time you did it. And so there should be no shame in that. I know you're upset. I know you're angry, and you should be because of what is going on. But you should not be upset or angry at the service you provided for this country to maintain its freedom these last 20 years to prevent the terrorists from coming over here. We went over there and bled and died for our freedoms.
What about those who died during the Afghani war? Did they die in vain?
No. They did not die in vain. In fact, those in Vietnam did not die in vain, because when you do things that the country's asked you to do and you want to go up there and fight for people on your left and right, for your buddies, you save lives, you help the Afghan people, you help their country. Just because America changes presidents every 4 or 8 years, we have no choice in that. That's the way our Constitution works. But we can stand proud that we did our duty and did our service at that time. So, yes, I stand with those who have lost loved ones. I did a lot of military funerals, military honors for those who did pass from this life, they gave their lives.
Again, if you are just tuning into the program, we're privileged to be speaking with a gentleman who has authored the book, The Military Guide to Armageddon, Battle-Tested Strategies to Prepare Your Life and Soul for the End Times. And we have Colonel David Giamona talking with us about a book that he co-wrote with Troy Anderson. You, in your last statement, you mentioned about, you know, we always, because of democracy and how our government is set up, we have changing leaders. Is that part of the problem with why America struggles to keep its alliances with its allies and its friends globally?
Yeah, I think that is the problem. I don't have a real good answer, because our Constitution and the voting and way that our democracy, it's not a perfect system, but it's the best system in the world right now, and it's the greatest system. So, yes, it is a problem, because when you change leadership, then you change philosophies, you change worldviews, you change geopolitical entities overnight. So, yes, it can be a big problem. But if you elect the right leader, then we won't have as serious a problem as we've had here recently.
Is that like the top, the tip of the mountain, or the as to what we can do? I mean, what else can we do as a country to be better allies to our allies and to those who support us in times of war?
Well, you know, this is a very big question. It's a great question, and you have to look into history about it. But, you know, the fact of the matter is presidents have a great deal of power. So we have to be very careful who we elect and who we put in Congress. I think term limits should be happening now in Congress. We need to get career politicians out of the political spectrum and elect common people. That's the way our government, our republic, is set up, for the commoner to come in and have a say. So we don't need professional politicians. And whether you love Donald Trump or not, you know, that's not the question. Yeah, he had flaws. One thing he was, you know, a billionaire, of course, but he was a part of a common people, and part of, in a sense, and when I mean common, I mean, he wasn't a career politician. So, you know, a lot of the things he did do at Institute were really, really good. And, you know, a lot of the things he did were not that great. But the fact of the matter is, when you elect a congressman, when you elect a politician, a president, a vice president, you better make sure that person represents what we're going to do, not only in the United States, but in the world. And so we need to stand up as a people, to answer your question, and get the right people in, and even protest peacefully the things that are happening right now in mass, so we can make changes to our government.
Talk to me about how your new book speaks to the current events that are happening around the world.
Well, you know, another great question. So the book is really full of practical, at the end of every chapter, what you can do to get your spiritual, emotional, and physical self ready for these end times. There's no question we're living in the end times. Now, many people say, well, we've been talking about that for 2,000 years. But we have to realize the signs of the end times are all around us now. The rebirth of the nation of Israel. You know, there were people back in the 1800s and early 1900s were saying Israel will never become a nation, but the Bible said it would become before the coming of the Lord. It would come to fruition, and in one day, and it did happen. So it happened in one day, the Balfour Declarations, and Britain gave us Israel. And so I would say that was a key factor for Israel to become a nation. Back in the late 1940s, And with all the other things that are going on, we write about this in the book. What can we do spiritually, physically, mentally, emotionally to prepare? So I take all my battlefield experience, all my training, and I translate it. We need pastors now. I want pastors to understand we need you to stand up and don't be afraid of the culture. Do not be afraid of the government. Don't be afraid of your congregation. Stand to tell the truth, because we owe it to our people to prepare them, because we're going in these battles without preparation. We're going to lose every time. So that's the genesis and the gist of the book.
I would ask you this, being a chaplain, as someone who a man of faith, how does religion play a role when it comes to our country and its roots?
Well, our country was founded by people who were disillusioned with religion in Britain, in England at the time, and they came over here to establish freedom. And this business of separating church and state is a lie, in a sense that, you know, our religious leaders back in the day who wrote the Constitution were not thinking about, you know, religion intruding into government. They were thinking about government intruding in religion, which is happening today. We need to get away from that idea. We need to get people in the Supreme Court and our elected politicians that will understand. For example, our Ivy League schools were all biblical-based institutions to teach men and women about the Word of God. And those institutions were transformed over years to be liberal bastions of Marxism, progressivism, and everything else that is wrong with our country and our world today. We need to get back to our roots. That's what I would say to that.
Does your book touch upon the best way to design a pullout once a war has been won?
Yeah, the book wasn't designed to do that, but there are plenty of people in Washington who have great skill sets in doing that kind of thing. But the book does emphasize a lot of the experiences I did experience in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and several times I almost lost my life, and God protected me from sniper fire and other tragic things, so I can come back and write the book. So the book really is focused on how do we get ourselves spiritually ready, physically, emotionally, mentally toughened, because we're going to have to stand up. And even in the Catholic Church, I'll just say this briefly. I admire Father Altman, who is a priest that stood up to the bishops and the powers that be in the church that wanted to close the Catholic Church during this pandemic. And he was one of the few that said, no, we're not going to close our church. We're going to stand for freedom. We're going to stand for our faith. And that's what our Protestant pastors need to be doing as well, standing for freedom, standing for faith, standing to give our people the strength and the endurance for what they're going to need in these end times.
In your opinion, what do you think are the next potential wars or hotspots around the globe are right now?
Well, I don't know if we have time. It's going to be a long answer, but I'll try to make it succinct. Number one, because of our geopolitical power around the world and their bad decision, critically bad decision in Afghanistan, now we've opened the door to Pandora's box for we're going to become terrorist targets again, because the Taliban used Afghanistan as a training base, as we all know. That's why we went in there. So they can stop them from coming over here. Well, our southern borders are now open. It's a catastrophe. And now we're going to let terrorists, and they're already here. They're coming through the border. They know that. And they're going to continue to do it. At the same time, China is the richest of Afghanistan. It's rich in minerals that China wants, and oil and other precious commodities. And China is making deals with them right now. They're telling the Taliban, we're going to give you billions of dollars for your war fund, for your training, if you'll just give us rights to dig in your country. And of course, the Taliban are going to say yes. And on top of that, China's already threatened Taiwan and said, Taiwan, you see what happened to Afghanistan? You cannot count on the United States. We're going to invade you and nobody's going to come. And even in the last few days, They have been practicing near the coast of Taiwan to invade that country. That's going to probably be the very next geopolitical storm that's going to happen, is Taiwan, an invasion of that. Iran is developing nuclear missiles. Israel said they're 10 weeks away, now 9 weeks away, from possessing nuclear fissional material to wipe out Israel. Israel cannot let that happen. We are on the brink of major conflicts around the world. And I don't tell that to scare people. I'm telling you that to get you ready and prepared, because it is going to happen. There's no question about it.
How could the strength of our leadership in Washington, whether it's our president or members in Congress, how can that help us in the long run prevent war, especially if it's going to be a global war?
Well, going back to Trump administration, whether you love him or hate him, he meant what he said and he said what he meant. I mean, everybody in the world knew if you attacked the U.S., you were going to pay a huge price. That's not so right now. And so, you know, Joe Biden and his administration are all about, quote, negotiation. Well, you cannot negotiate with terrorism or with rogue republics or rogue dictators such as North Korea. They only know one language, and that language is strength and unity and force if necessary. And so our political leaders, our Congress, need to come together and stop fighting each other and stop the news media trying to divide the United States. We need to come together, or we're going to lose in the long run our freedoms and our country.
Again, if you are just tuning into our great conversation here, we're privileged to be speaking with the U.S. Army Chaplain Colonel David Giamona. And we're talking about his new book that he co-wrote with Troy Anderson. And the book's called The Military Guide to Armageddon: Battle-Tested Strategies to Prepare Your Life and Soul for the End Times. Now, this is something I should have asked you earlier on in our conversation when we're talking about veterans, those who have served their country. Why do you feel that veterans are emotional about what took place in Afghanistan?
Well, I can understand that. I mean, I had emotions. I still do. There's a lot of anger. A lot of veterans are asking themselves, well, I went over there and served my country, and now look what they're doing. They're slapping us in the face by, you know, doing things that are just totally, as our veterans know, totally ridiculous. The military doesn't operate this way. And so a lot of people are saying, was it worth it? You know, did I serve my country? Was it all for nothing? Because look what's going on now. And I would say to that, as I said earlier, it is for something. You served your country well. You served the people of Afghan, and you prevented terrorists from coming and blowing us up as they did in 9/11. You cannot control, I would say to everybody, what a president does or what a military does in the future. You can only go by what you did in the past. So that's basically what I would say.
As we have a few minutes left here in our conversation, what was it like to finally have the finished version of your book done and have it in hand and be able to get it out to folks who are interested in your book?
First of all, I know I'm biased in this opinion, but it really is a great book. It's a great read. Whatever you believe, what we have to say or not, it really is well written. And Troy Anderson, Pulitzer Prize nominated journalist and just incredibly smart guy, we wrote it together. And when it came out on January the 5th, and you know what happened in this country on January 6th, we were on every news network in the world, you know, talking about what happened. A lot of people were saying, did you plan this book to come out at this time? You know, this is on national networks across the country. And I said, no, but God knows what he's doing and when it shouldn't be released. And so we are very excited to get this book in the hands. I really want to get this book in the hands of pastors and to read and really strengthen their congregations, because things are not going to get better anytime soon. And I'm not a negative person by nature, but the fact of the matter is, if we're not prepared, and that's the reason we wrote the book, to get you prepared and understand what's going on. So if you're not prepared, you're going to fall by the wayside or lose faith, and that's what we don't want to happen. That's why we're excited for the book to be out right now.
Is there something that I haven't asked you in regards to the book, but you feel important to getting across the folks who are taking in this interview?
Well, there's a lot of great chapters in the book that I could name: The Fog of War, The Center of Gravity, all talking about our lives and how it affects us. But the one thing I really want people to know is become battle ready. And that's the name of our ministry that we put together, Choi and I. Battle ready. You can actually go to the website, battle-ready.org, and look at many of the great things that are going on. But, you know, battle ready means we have units in Korea right now, and their motto is fight tonight. They're ready to go at a moment's notice because the bullets and missiles coming from North Korea can happen any moment. And as we find in Afghanistan, our military has to be always prepared for contingencies like this. And so we have to be battle ready. And that is a, you know, a long conversation, which we do training across the country around the world to pastors, and we teach them how to become battle ready. But the first thing is, as Jesus said, watch and pray. Watch what's going on in the world and pray that for strength, pray for endurance, and use prayer as one of the weapons of our warfare. You know, use prayer as not just asking God for what you need, but asking God to change geopolitical world situations, to change our policies, and change our world around us, change people. So battle ready has a lot. We can spend hours talking about it, but that's what one of the first chapters in the book called Battle Ready.
If folks want to get a copy of your book, what's the best and easiest way for them to be able to do that?
Well, everybody knows Amazon. So go to Amazon, click on the button. If you have the one-click thing, just type in the book, Battle Military Guide Armageddon. You can click on it. You can get it. You can download it on Kindle. It's also on Audible. It's an Audible book. It is in so many different ways. A book's a million. It's in the stores. It's everywhere. So it's easy to get.
I feel like it's a wonderful time to be an author because there's so many different platforms. As you were kind of giving us details about Amazon, but you also mentioned if you know you have a device, you can read it on your device. Or if you're somebody who likes listening to books and not reading the books, you go to Audible. And it's a wonderful time to be an author, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we love our publisher, Chosen Books. They're really, really great. We love working with them.
You want to give a little love to your publisher? Who published it and worked with
it? Yeah, so Baker Publishing Group is one of the largest publishers in the world, and one of their divisions is Chosen Books. Jane Campbell, who was our editor, gave us really a good start. She retired. We're doing our second book right now called Disarming Deception in the End Times, and and Dave Sluka is our new editor, and he's doing a wonderful job. So a lot of love to Chosen Books and Dave Sluka.
Colonel, I want to thank you so much for being my guest on this segment.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And anytime you want back, just let me know.
And we thank you for tuning into this radio broadcast. We hope that you'll tune in and join us once again next week at 6:15 p.m. Until then, have yourself a good night. You've been tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.